Welcome to Redmond Radio for the week of March 16th. In this episode, the March security update has one critical item. Microsoft releases System Center 2012 CTPs. And PC sales are slated to improve in 2013 thanks to Windows 8, says one report. We'll get to that news and more right here on Redmond Radio in just a second. Welcome to Redmond Radio, the weekly podcast of news and information for the Microsoft and IT professional. Yes, really, thanks for listening. As usual, before we get started, here are the many ways to contact me in regards to this podcast. First, you can email me at mdomingo@1105media.com. That's M-D-O-M-I-N-G-O at 1105media.com. Or you can call me on my Google Voice number. No one ever calls me on that, but still, here it is, 760-536-8859. You can leave a message there and just, you know, blab about all sorts of stuff, and it might even end up on this podcast. Also, you can go to my Facebook and Twitter accounts and post messages there. I'm at Domingo Photo, D-O-M-I-N-G-O-P-H-O-T-O. Speaking of Facebook and Twitter, there are Twitter and Facebook accounts for the Redmond Radio, or not Redmond Radio, the Redmond Magazine pages, as well as MCP Mag. So be sure to keep track of those using those services. Mainly because we do post some things at random just about every day, but there might be something kind of interesting to you. So anyhow, be sure to follow those pages, especially the Redmond Magazine one that I set up over there on just search for Redmond Magazine on Facebook. Anyhow, let's get started with the news. First up, there is a Microsoft security update that, it was posted this week, and it featured six bulletins with one labeled as critical. Four of them were labeled important, and one was moderate. The lone critical item, number 20, fixes two privately reported issues in the remote desktop protocol for all versions of Windows. If exploited, attackers could initiate a remote code execution by sending a sequence of specially crafted RDP packets to an affected system. That, according to this bulletin, organizations not running RDP aren't at risk. It's a feature that has to be set up in Windows. It is not turned on by default. The workaround requires that remote desktops network-level authentication to certify before starting a desktop session. This workaround will block unauthorized access by the exploits, and it should not be treated as a permanent fix. The workaround should be pushed to users as soon as the testing phase is complete, at least for those where you will be using RDP. Microsoft's remaining bulletins for the month are recommended to be rolled out at the discretion of admins due to the less severe nature of the associated vulnerabilities. Here's a rundown. Number 17 is an important item that affects Windows Server 2003, 2008, and 2008 R2. Fixes a denial of service flaw that can be taken advantage of by an attacker, sending a malicious DNS query to a DNS server. Number 18 affects multiple versions of Windows and Windows Server. Patches a vulnerability that could allow an elevation of privilege attack if especially created application is run. Number 21 is an important item designed to take care of an elevation of privilege flaw in Microsoft Visual Studio. Number 22 is a remote code execution issue in Microsoft Expression Design. An attacker could gain access to a system if a user clicks on a legitimate file that redirects to a malicious DLL file. Number 19 is a moderate item. Patches an error in Windows Direct Write that could lead to the program crashing if a specially crafted Unicode sequence is sent through the Messenger window. Here's an interesting side note to the patch released this week. Mozilla, who make the open source Firefox browser, announced it was delaying the release of Firefox 11 due to Microsoft's update. Mozilla was looking to address any compatibility issues with the new browser and the security update. Check this out. Microsoft this week slashed the prices of many of its Office 365 service plans by about 20%. The price cuts resulted from achieving economies of scale, the company explained last Wednesday. Such economies of scale can be accomplished through technology efficiencies, but it can also happen with greater customer adoption of the service. Microsoft revealed few concrete details about Office 365's adoption level so far. Office 365 is Microsoft's cloud-based suite of applications that includes hosted versions of Exchange, Link, and SharePoint, with Office offered as a customer premises installed option. According to the Office 365 website, new pricing for the four Office 365 plans aimed at enterprises is as follows. The Enterprise One plan is $8 per user per month. E2 plan is $14 per user per month. The E3 plan is $20 per month, and the E4 plan is $22 per month. The plan aimed at small businesses is P1, which remains unchanged at $6 per user per month. There are also two plans aimed at kiosk workers, which is Microsoft's term for workers such as retail employees who don't have a desk or who share a PC. The lower level version K1 remains unchanged at $4 per user per month. The more feature-rich version, K2, now costs $8 per user per month, down from $10. There's a table posted on Microsoft Watcher Mary Jo Foley's blog that you can check out over at, I believe it's All About Microsoft, or something to that effect, over at the ZDNet site. All right, before we move on to some Windows 8 news, which will probably dominate the rest of this podcast, here's some news about the CanSec West Security Conference, where they run the Pwn to Own contest, or something to that effect. I don't know how you really actually pronounce that name. But anyways, Google's Chrome web browser fell to many exploits last week during the contest. And in response, Google released an over-the-air patch last week to fix one of the issues demonstrated by hacker Sergey Glazunov. The update will be silently pushed to users. Glazunov is a Russian university student who used a pair of privately disclosed exploits to bypass Chrome's sandbox. If exploited by hackers, malicious code could be run on an infected machine. For demonstrating that attack, Glazunov was awarded with $60,000 by Google. Glazunov wasn't the only one to expose a hole in the Chrome browser last week. Members of the vulnerability research firm Vupin Security demonstrated a way to bypass the Chrome sandbox using a bug in Windows to bypass the DEP and the address space layout randomization. It also demonstrated a second Chrome flaw, believe it or not. However, information on that has not been released. The group said it wasn't participating in the hacking contest for monetary gain. Because the first flaw demonstrated by Vupin is caused by a Windows exploit and the second item had little data disclosed on it, fixes are not included in last week's Chrome update. This year's Pwn to Own contest marks the first time Google's web browser has fallen to attackers. It participated and left the previous 2 years unscathed. All right, now on to that Windows Server 8 news that I was talking about. First up, Microsoft last month quietly rolled out an online backup service for use with its Windows Server 8 beta. Not everyone can try out the new Microsoft Online Backup Service. It's currently offered in the U.S. only as a free trial via the Microsoft Connect portal for those who qualify, although Microsoft indicated last week that many trial spots still are available. Users have to fill out an online survey form that asks about the number of servers, how those servers are used, and the amount of data that typically gets backed up. It also appears that Microsoft is expecting testers to have high bandwidth connections to participate. Basically, the minimum requirement is only a 512 kilobit per second line. The online backup service seems to have flown somewhat under the radar. Its existence was pointed out last week by MVP Aidan Finn in a blog post. Microsoft's description of the service can be found in a white paper which can be downloaded on the website. The service gets installed on the Windows Server 8 beta, allowing file and folder backups to the cloud service. The user experience for this cloud-based backup service is described as being similar to the user experience found in the Windows Server backup feature. The on-premises version, that is. Testers have the option to use either the GUI or PowerShell to do it. Microsoft is getting testing data before making this online backup service available more broadly, according to the white paper. However, it isn't clear how the service will be offered or when. The service actually is built on Windows Azure, according to Microsoft. Microsoft's white paper explains that the Windows Server 8 beta is already pre-provisioned to work with a Microsoft Online Services account, which is required to use the backup service. Data gets encrypted when using the online backup service, but Finn noted that the users have to be careful to record the passphrase for data encryption because Microsoft doesn't store it. Users won't be able to restore data if they lose that passphrase, so that's a bit of a problem, right? There are other restrictions with regard to the kind of data that gets backed up by the service. For instance, users can back up encrypted data, and they can back up compressed data, but they can't back up encrypted and compressed data. Finn noted that Microsoft's document omitted any description of data deduplication or compression before backup. Microsoft did clarify in an email to us that data is compressed on the files on the server before it is transmitted to the service for backup. Only changed blocks are stored across different points and times of the backup. Finn also noted that a description about backing up Hyper-V virtual machines isn't described in the document. Some of the limitations of the backup service specified by Microsoft include the inability to do system state backups. Furthermore, for the beta, the backup size is limited to 10 gigabytes. Users of the beta are limited to performing just 3 backups per day, and the service just works with the Windows Server 8 beta and does not work with other Windows releases. The backup service has some system requirements. To test it, a computing environment needs to have Windows PowerShell, Windows Identity Framework, and Windows Live ID client authentication installed. Microsoft also suggests having about 1.5 gigabytes of local cache storage available. Just this Monday, a new beta search tool for PowerShell users that's designed to find code across local and online repositories was released. The pre-release or test version of Microsoft Script Explorer for Windows PowerShell can be downloaded for x86 and x64 systems. Script Explorer finds PowerShell scripts and snippets as well as modules and help resources. Users can specify searching across local or network repositories. It also searches across PoshCode repositories and the TechNet Script Center repository, and Beam. Microsoft said it took a semantic web approach when it designed Script Explorer, according to Jason Hogg, a principal architect at Microsoft. For instance, the tool will track down actual code rather than just finding the words PowerShell script when it searches. Over time, scripts have gotten lodged in a number of repositories, so Microsoft set out to build a tool that could find them, as well as provide access to scripts housed within an organization. Script Explorer will show code organized by categories, and users can download and store the scripts after locating them, said Hogg. Script Explorer works with the Windows 8 Consumer Beta Preview as well as Windows 7 Service Pack 1 and Vista SP2. It also runs on the Windows Server 8 Beta, plus Windows Server 2008 R2 SP1 and Windows Server 2008 SP2. Script Explorer also requires the installation of Windows PowerShell 2 or PowerShell 3. It runs as an add-on to the Windows PowerShell integrated scripting environment on the client computer. Alright, in somewhat related news, Microsoft late last week released two community technology previews of System Center 2012 solutions specifically designed for use with the new Windows Server 8 beta. The CTPs are Virtual Machine Manager and Data Protection Manager, which are part of the System Center suite. Requires that a computing environment also have SQL Server 2008 R2 with Service Pack 1, .NET 3.5, and Microsoft Hyper-V hypervisor installed. System Center 2012 hit its release candidate milestone in January and is publicly available as an evaluation copy, but it only works with Windows Server 2008 R2 at present. The important note in regard to the new CTPs is that they are the only publicly available System Center 2012 components to tap into the newly released Windows Server 8 beta. The current System Center 2012 will not support some Windows Server 8 features until after Microsoft's new server product is released. Those currently unsupported features include live storage migration, shared nothing live migrations, and the virtual hard disk format VHDX, according to a Microsoft blog post. Support for those features likely will arrive with a future update to System Center 2012. In the meantime, testers who want to try out the latest Virtual Machine Manager and Data Protection Manager System Center 2012 releases that do work with Windows Server 8 can download the CTPs right now. All right, and finally, in our last item, strong user adoption of Windows 8 and steady sales of Ultrabooks should help the PC market next year, according to market research firm Gartner. Worldwide PC shipments will rise by only 4.4% in 2012, totaling 368 million units, according to Gartner's recent figures. Gartner cited the economy and supply issues as factors contributing to the recent weakness in the PC market. In particular, last year's floods in Thailand, a country that produces one-third of the world's hard drives, caused a significant supply problem. The popularity of tablets and smartphones is also hurting the PC market, said Ranjit Atwal, research director at Gartner, in a prepared statement. The use of applications such as email, social networking, and internet access that were traditionally the domain of the PC are now being used across media, tablets, and smartphones, making these devices in some cases more valued and attractive propositions. Cloud-based services are another factor, according to Gartner, said Atwal in the statement. We expect a shift to the personal cloud will also accelerate as customers increasingly adopt cloud-based services as part of their digital ecosystem. The evolution of the personal cloud will challenge vendors across all multiple device markets and add to the hurdles of PC vendors to overcome to revive the PCs and differentiate them from tablets. Although tablets are tools primarily for content consumption and PCs are better suited to content creation, Atwal thinks that the difference may not be enough to counteract the growth in the media tablet market. While the PC market is expected to remain stagnant this year, Gartner expects better growth in 2012, with shipments exceeding 400 million units in that year. The impending release of Windows 8 and increased interest in Ultrabooks could help revive the market, said Gartner, though it is still uncertain how much of an effect Windows 8 will have. The new OS is currently available as a consumer preview version, with a final release expected in late 2012 or early 2013. Atwal said Windows 8 needs to be compelling enough to get early adopters excited about PCs again. Gartner predicted growing interest in Ultrabooks in the second half of 2012. Ultrabooks are lightweight, high-performance laptops with solid-state drives and long battery life. PCs have saturated the market, and sales occur primarily when people need to replace their existing unit. According to Atwal, the most PC growth will take place in emerging markets, both in the short and long term. Said Atwal, our expectation is that 2012 and then 2013 onwards will be supported by growth in emerging markets as their share increases from just over 50% in 2011 to nearly 70% in 2016. And believe it or not, that is this episode, or this week's episode of Redmond Radio. Do write to me at mdomingo@1105media.com. if you want to suggest any changes or give me any feedback on this show. All right. Well, that's it. So see you next week right here on Redmond Radio.